FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is February 20th, 2017. And as always, emails are more than welcome. KL@KerryLutz.com. So have you noticed there is a war on savers? Well, it's been going on now since the birth of the Federal Reserve, but now it's so much more obvious than ever. Well, you've seen a war on alcohol, the war on drugs. It's just a nice way of saying war declared by the government upon you, upon me, upon the populace. And Chris Martinson is with us, peakprosperity.com. That's where you find Chris's fine work. Chris, a regular guest on the show. Chris, great to have you back on again. How are you?
Oh, thanks, Kerry. Always a pleasure to be with you. I've been well, and it's almost spring up here, it feels like. So feeling the sap rising again.
Hey, well, that's my favorite time of the year up north, when the trees start to bloom and the first warm day of spring in New York, where everybody would just come out of their office towers and you would just be like eating your lunch outside. And that was always my favorite time of the year, kind of rebirth, if you will. And maybe we're having a rebirth now with what's happening. We're about to have Frexit. Everybody's saying Marine Le Pen cannot win. And just like Trump could not win, just like Brexit could not happen, just like the Italian government could not fall yet again, you couldn't have the expanded Euro influence in Italy's internal governance. All of this couldn't happen, Chris, and yet it's happening now. Right.
Well, it really is. Now, I know there's a lot of factors involved in how political parties rise and fall, how individuals get elected or not. But your listeners could do worse than to just focus on what's happening to people economically, because let's be really clear, whether we're talking Democrats, Republicans, left, right, in Europe, in the United States, it doesn't matter. The story has been the same. Wrap up for general consumption for the little people, a story that sort of feels good. Hey, we're about, you know, human rights and democracy or individual rights. None of that's true. The story for the last 20, 25 years has been one of increasing theft from the masses towards a really tiny elite. Even in the data that we have looking at, I don't know, Kerry, median income and real wages and things that are clearly sloppy and declining for the average person, it's worse than that. Of course it is, because we understate inflation, because we lie about that. So it corrodes our sense of trust in government. And, you know, the reason that median household income is only as high as it is because now we have two earners where we used to have one. Sometimes people have three jobs for two people in a household because that's what it takes to even scrape a few extra bucks in, because the jobs stink. You know, that 4.9% unemployment rate, or 4.8, wherever it's down to, we know that's junk, right? So you add up this corrosion of being lied to, fibbed to, otherwise not having been truthfully spoken to, and you combine that with your daily reality of knowing that you've been left behind, the unfairness of seeing so-called captains of industry who are mostly just paper pushers. You know, I know a lot of people in the hedge fund industry. I hope I don't piss them off here, but they don't produce anything. They just skim money and they siphon it and it goes from one way to the other. And we have this cult of hero worship because, hey, they're rich people, and media says, oh my God, they're rich people. They must have something important to say. And so they give them lots of airtime. But the truth is this: for average people in Europe and the United States, times are getting harder because the economic oxygen is being sucked out of our atmosphere on purpose by people who know they're doing it, and they're lying to us about the fact that they're doing it or why they're doing it.
Well, of course. You know, they're a bunch of rent seekers, rentier class, as they call them, right? I mean, isn't that what it's about? They produce nothing. They just live off the fat of the land. I mean, you know, like Mitt Romney, how many jobs did he really create here? I mean, after he helped found Staples, which Staples, all it did was put neighborhood stationers out of business, right? I mean, it didn't. I mean, you could argue that Staples was more productive than the neighborhood stationer. I tend to doubt that. I really, really do. Was Staples more efficient than your neighborhood stationer? On one level, yes. But then you go into Staples and you see the employees there. I don't know. I mean, I really tend to wonder about it, you know?
Well, sure. You know, a lot of the changes and things that we've gotten have given us cost efficiency. But that's just, you know, the fact that stuff is cheap doesn't equate into that's made things better for us. Mm-hmm. And people should know that, right? You know, cheap clothes fall apart quickly, all of that. But you know, what we've gone down in this country, in the United States, but in Europe as well, is down this rabbit hole of thinking that, you know, just because it's cheaper, you know, you can put a Staples in there, it's somehow better. But that's just, back up a sec. That's disguising the fact that the people who are telling us how great it is, who keep telling us that we all want low prices, who keep doing all of that, are the same people who are taking advantage of labor arbitrage, meaning they can go ahead and create, you know, get their printers built in a really low cost labor environment somewhere in the world, and then move them easily across borders and then sell them into places where you can sell them for more money. That's wonderful that you have movement of capital and movement of labor if you're a corporation. But if you happen to live here and you don't have the freedom of picking your job up and moving it, it's not a great thing. And this is what's happened, is that this relentless story of telling ourselves that these trends and directions are both inevitable and good, neither of those are true. And that's what we're seeing in the Marine Le Pen and the Trump and the Italian. And I guarantee you other elections are average people coming together and saying, hey, wait a minute, my life is not better. It's worse, yeah. Right? I don't know if you saw this, Carrie, but looking at, it's not in our media right now, but if you go over to the French media, you can see that there are constant riots over there. Youths, mostly male youths from other countries, clearly rioting, burning, constantly creating a sense of lack of safety over there. It's mm-hmm. really like, if anybody listening to this was around it even for a minute, they'd get that awkward feeling in their body saying, ah, that's I don't want to be anywhere close to that. And this is what people are being forced to live with. And of course, they're reacting to it. But then the media, by the time it comes here to the United States, they say, oh my gosh, it's Marine Le Pen, and she's a nationalist, and she's a xenophobe, and she's mm-hmm. probably racist, and all of these other things, when in fact, what she's saying is, we, the average people, have to live with the consequences of the decisions of the people higher up, who don't have to live with the consequences of their decisions, yeah, exactly. Right? If Congress had to live with Obamacare, we wouldn't have it. I guarantee you. Right. Question. So this is this whole idea that there's this group of elites telling lies, making stuff up, being pretty self-interested, and basically telling the rest of us, deal with it. And we're tired of it out here. Like, that's yes. if you don't understand that dynamic, Trump is a mystery. Le Pen is a mystery. It'll all continue to be a mystery. So demystify it. Understand what the forces are that are making people say, I don't consent to this anymore. I can't sign up for any more of this. This isn't working.
Yep, exactly true. And yeah, that is, Walter Williams always said that the major flaw in our democracy is that Congress does not have to live by the rules that they force all the rest of us to live by. And that's a big, big issue, because if they don't have to live by the rules, then they could make us do anything and it makes no difference, because, yeah, they've got their own health plan, right?
Right. Well, this is basically an extension of the Stanley Milgram experiments at Stanford way back when in the 60s, right, where they took college students and set up one group of them as prison guards and another group as prisoners, mm-hmm. and then let the experiment run with no rules. And they got some very bad behaviors out of people. Yeah. Right. And it's just, here's a rule. When human beings are disconnected from the consequences of their actions, they do increasingly awful stuff, right? Downright well, that's Congress evil. To me, right? It, like, the simplest fix, like you just mentioned, you know, Walter's got a great idea there. Make Congress live by their own rules, and then they'll behave totally differently. And if I was going to have, you know, Chris, you get to write one constitutional amendment, you know, here you go. Mine would be, if we ever have bullets flying anywhere in our name, anywhere in the world, the people who have to be at the front lines, no rear echelon jobs, front lines of that conflict are the children of the Congress people and senators. And if they don't have children, then they have to be there themselves.
I love that.
You put that little rule in there, I guarantee you there'll be more thoughtful debate. They'll be thinking it through a little bit more carefully. They'll be saying, do we really care what happens in Syria? Not so sure. You know, then I would begin to trust that more. But that's not the world we live in right now. And again, that is part of the fuel that's driving all of this, which is, as humans, mm-hmm. we're primates. You can run these studies on all sorts of different monkeys. You can run them on humans too. And you discover that primates, because we're social creatures, we don't like things to be unfair. When they're unfair, we don't like them.
Yeah, well, as my law school professor used to say, fair is a sissy word. Because things are just always unfair. You know that.
I know, but if I could, I would also reduce the number of lawyers involved in all of this, particularly when it comes to making laws. I think lawyers are great at what they do, which is about parsing stuff, getting down to minutiae, you know, making sure contracts are written well, but they're not the people I want running my business ever, because Agreed. They think in terms of risk. They think in terms of what can't be done. They think in terms of what will go wrong. And guess what? Out of the 535 people, you know, who are ostensibly leading this country, some ridiculous number of them are have law degrees in their background and
totally
training.
Agree with you. I always said I was a businessman first and a lawyer second, and that really really served me well. I mean, having that analytical thought was a real plus, because hey, you could, you know, it helped you making deals and all that. Understanding the law is really, really a plus. But yeah, as far as running a country with lawyers, I think it's the worst thing you could ever have. And that's what we've got. We've got a government by lawyers, right?
Sure. And of course, you know, when you do, then you have, you know, the legendary statements. I believe it was Nancy Pelosi who said, well, we're going to have to pass the law to find out what's in it. You know, because it's 2,700 pages, but it's not even like 2,700 pages you could read. It was the one she was referring to. It's that each one of the passages might say, this now amends paragraph 2 of this other law, which then amended paragraph 8 of this other law. And so by the time you've untangled all of that, you have to pass it and then find out what works its way through the legal system. Like, whoa, time out. You know, that's a crazy way to run your things. And that's what you get, I think, with lawyers in charge. Of course, you know, I don't know a single lawyer that I've ever work with who would love to create a 2,700 page manifesto with little dangly bits that lead to other 2,700 page monstrosities. It, you know, but who can follow that? Nobody, right? In terms of effective governance, obviously there's a level of complexity beyond which things don't make sense. But more importantly, all of that complexity is really there to design and cover up one thing, which is the degree of unfairness that is encoded in the system.
Hey, so here's a question for you. Are they going to replace and repeal Obamacare, or what are they going to do?
Oh, who knows? I mean, there are not that many things you can do with it. You can either repeal it, and then who knows what sort of stands up in its place. You know, this is I'll probably have the same critique of how Trump goes about it that I did Obama, which was this. I was asked to pony up a lot of extra money. You know, my health care bill went up 61.5% this year, 28% last year, on and on back through. So I'm getting just killed by this. The physicians are also getting killed with like massive, you know, new reporting requirements and HIPAA codes and, you know, these new, anyway, they're just getting destroyed. I talk to doctors all the time who say they wouldn't advise their own children to go into this once sacred profession because it's not honorable anymore. It's a really awful thing. So everybody's sort of been asked to cough up something in the story, except the healthcare companies, except, you know, the fact that, you know, United Healthcare and, you know, all those other cats, their C-suite, all those people in the CFO, CIO, CEO roles are raking in millions, if not tens of millions, criminal. If not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Criminal.
Every year.
Totally right? Criminal.
That to me, when you're paying people that much, you do not have a competitive industry. That's telling me that there are barriers to entry that, again, happen because of the complexity, which they lobbied for, knowing that you can't start up a competing healthcare insurance company if you wanted to, looking at those fat margins and paychecks. You can't do it, right? Because we have a system that prevents you from getting in. And so really, you know, we don't have like this people all the time, Kerry. They're like, Chris, you know, I believe in free market. And capitalism, like, whoa, time out. When have you ever seen those?
Our lifetimes.
I love the libertarian fantasy, but let's be clear, we don't have any experience with those two things because we don't know what they would look like.
No, not at all.
You know, so that's also contributing to all of this. And then, of course, you have the things people can get their arms around in that story. Like, I just heard about another child-saving anti-cancer miracle cure that's come out, a treatment for that in the United States for a year, $84,000. Mm-hmm. In any other country, it'd be about $1,000, right? Mm. I know the arguments like, oh, but if we don't recoup our costs, you know, but let's be clear about this. When you see, you know, that people are being locked out of life-saving medications because of costs that are clearly not just twice as much as anywhere else, but 80 times higher than anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. You've gone off the rails in this story. This has become immoral. I don't care about these arguments. Oh, you know, who's going to fund healthcare? Well, we'll talk about that. But if you're going to act immorally, don't try and use a moral argument with me about, you know, how we're going to save lives, because that's not what's happening in this story. We're just abusing ourselves.
Hey, well, let's not forget, there was never a problem with funding healthcare until the government started funding it, right?
Yeah. Well, or look at student loans. Same process, right?
Yeah.
You know, just an astonishing, you know, the almost we're approaching a $900 billion in extra student loans since the crisis started. It's just amazing.
Well, my sister went to college in the 60s. I think it cost $50 a semester. That was the whopping cost of college when she went. She went to state school, you know, Douglas College, which was an excellent college in the good old days. And, you know, $50 a semester. I mean, that was just the tuition. So What the heck happened here? Right. Then it became big business. It wasn't big business back then. And all of a sudden it became big business and a big scam, Ponzi scheme. Even when I went, Chris, it was for my entire undergrad and I went an extra semester. I think it paid $15,000 for it. I mean, so there was a pretty quick payback for it then. And now look what's happened.
Well, indeed. And so this general process is what happens when consequences are separated from actions. So I think colleges would behave very differently if they had some skin in the game, meaning that they would loan money to students.
Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden, the college has to say, oh, do I really want to loan $150,000 to a gender studies of the Mesopotamian era, you know, scroll interpreter or whatever, you know, some like really narrow focused like thing where there's no jobs existing out there for it. And they were on the hook for the repayment of that loan. They might think differently. About how they went through that. Not that all has to be mercenary and you need, you know, direct ROIs and all this and that, but the colleges, their only incentive is to charge as much as they can.
Yeah, well.
And so they do. It's just human behavior. It's not tricky to unravel here.
I talk about that in my book, Viral Podcasting. And I went to Pace University, Urban University in the 70s. We didn't know what diversity was, but we did have it. And these kids all needed remedial this, remedial that. And we had open admissions, which means anybody could go regardless what your level of proficiency. And they just rolled the dice and hoped for the best. And, you know, probably half of them fell out and flunked out of college. And the other half, you know, stumbled and bumbled their way through. And that was how it worked. You know, now it's probably worse. So,
yeah. And, you know, compounding all of this, of course, is the idea that I think part of the reason why everybody has to have a college degree now, even to work at Burger King, is because we don't actually have a lot of jobs for people to come into. And so college becomes warehousing, which is, I understand the process. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. But we've had just a really extraordinary erosion in the types of jobs that we can have. And, you know, my work, Gary, is about understanding the larger forces, which is we can't just understand the economic stuff. So we've been talking, you and I, here today about that. You know, there's trade issues. There's, you know, elite sucking too much out. There's, you know, bad policies. Mm-hmm. There's cartels. That's all true. But if we go one step further and we ask, where are we in the global story of this? We discover some, you know, take a few big steps backwards. One, the world has more indebtedness than it's ever had. And that doesn't even include the unfunded liabilities. And if you add those in, we're just in territory nobody even knows how to make sense of anymore. So the only way to get out of that story is to have really rapid economic growth come back. Well, when we untangle that, we discover that the things you need for rapid economic growth include cheap, abundant energy, cheap, abundant resources. Well, we're not in that part of the story as humans anymore. We can get more oil, but it ain't the cheap stuff they were getting in the 50s and 60s. It's just totally different stuff, right? We can get more energy, but it's costing us a lot more now. But we can't get more fish out of the ocean at this point in time. We can't find any new arable land to, you know, get high mineral content soils to begin strip mining, as it were, through farming practices. We can't find big new abundant sources of fresh water, etc. So now we're down to the hard part of the story, which is, you know, from being a business person, there's the rapid growth phase. Wow, that's cool. But then you get competitors, and there's a point at which you have to be really thoughtful and careful about how you control costs. costs, revenues, the whole thing, right? Well, we're at that thoughtful, careful part, but the only thing the Federal Reserve knows is like, let's just get back. We'll just throw free money and magic will happen. And they're so out of step with the times because of the debt issues, because of the resource issues. We are just not where we were in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And I think the Trump supporters who are thinking, if we could just, you know, do magic thinking, pixie dust, and we'll go back to how things used to be 20, 40, 50 years ago, they're mistaken as well, because the conditions don't exist for that at this point in time. So, you know, there's a big set of issues here we have to begin wrestling with. I think we're going to have to be a little bit more mature about it. And this is where we get to my concern in this story, which is that I think people are fighting the wrong battles. Mm-hmm. When I see, you know, I talked about this on my website where I saw like the Berkeley protests, right? Bunch of people on the left kind of upset that this guy Milo is going to come, a conservative, of a grab bag conservative, sort of an odd character coming out of the Breitbart side of things. And anyway, so they're both fighting each other and they're in Berkeley. And I thought the irony of this is absolutely there should have been protests at Berkeley, but not for Milo's presence. It should be for Janet Yellen.
Yeah.
Who teaches at Berkeley. She's the reason both sides of this story are being economically shocked. Mm-hmm. The Fed has been running a program to take money from savers, right? That's what a 0% interest rate means. Steal that money, but where did it go? They just pretend like, oh, interest rates are low. You know, your interest just, it's not happening. No, that money that you would have been getting went somewhere. Went to the banking system.
Ooh,
they're using it to drive stock markets up and sell assets to each other and have record bonuses and have to fight over trophy property, because there's not enough for all these rich people to buy in Gulfstream 650s and art going out the roof and all that stuff. Because the Federal Reserve specifically said, Granny, no money for you. We have to give it to these really super rich people. That's been done. Nobody voted on that. Nobody asked any questions about this at the Humphrey Hawkins and other Fed testimony and you know, in front of DC crowds. Nobody's really pressing on them. The media is dead silent on this. It's just guys like me and you just out here going, this is deeply unfair. And it's having huge consequences. And it's really not a good thing. And it's Janet Yellen personally who's responsible for this. Bernanke personally, Greenspan personally, absolutely, not the Fed as an organization. These individuals as captains, I want their names on the books as the people who specifically took an entire generation of millennials, cut them in their hamstrings and said, now run fast. Right?
Yeah.
Can't form a household anymore because they drove house prices back up where you can't afford a starter home. Mm-hmm. You know, took $1 trillion in savings interest income away from the parents and grandparents who would have used that to help capitalize the startup businesses that millennials are not starting because $1 trillion is missing. Oh, but it went over to these wealthy people, right? So that's what's been happening. And we need to have a conversation about that. So let me, if I can, connect this all the way back to Berkeley. Yes, these people are being shocked on the left, but the shocks are not coming from people like Milo on the right. And his people he's talking to are feeling the shocks as well, but it's not because of these people on the left. They're like two rats in a cage. They're fighting each other, but we need to talk about the cage. Yeah. And that cage has been built by a very regressive organization called the Federal Reserve and their proxy handlers in DC who have specifically gone out and said, we're going to take $1 trillion or more dollars from the middle and lower classes, and we're going to transfer it to our buddies. And I think that's shocking and should be talked about.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about. Regressive, it couldn't be any worse. It's really stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. That's what they've done, and making the rich even richer. Because, yeah, those hedge funds, I mean, they said, hey, here's free money. Go up and buy all those foreclosed houses that the middle class, the lower middle class, and even the upper middle class lost during the last recession. Just go there, take it, and go for it. That's what they did. You know, it's amazing. I couldn't believe what they did there. And that's okay. You know, how is that okay? I must have missed something. I mean, and that's good for the economy. Chris, how is that good for the economy?
No, it's not good for anybody. And we know, well, except for very, very few.
For them,
but even them, if they're really deeply self-interested, they should understand something that, you know, this is all fun and games until it turns. And when it turns, they may discover that having a lot of wealth is not as fun as they thought it was. It may make them a target. It may evaporate in a sudden panic. Who knows? So instead of really sitting down and saying, hey, what are our core values? Where are we going? How do we want to get there? What's really important to us? You know, to me, it's clearly obvious that when you have 8 people in the world holding as much wealth as 3.6 billion people, you got a problem on your hands in the sense that's the sort of like, that's just putting flammable substances all over dry tinder and smoking nearby. I mean, you know, I don't know if it'll catch on fire, but the chance of it is a lot higher than it used to be. That's what we're playing with here. So, you know, to have specifically used monetary policy to reward some and punish most of everybody else, that was a really bad idea. And it's not like they did it as an emergency because they had to rescue the economy. Carrie, where are we now? 8-9 years into this story?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to, like, give me one more year and we're up to a decade. 2018, we will be 10 full years of reverse Robin Hooding in this story. And now we're paying the price. And if you don't understand this, Trump will be a mystery to you. Marine Le Pen will be a mystery. What happens next in Italy and Greece will be a mystery, but it's not a mystery.
Definitely not. Don't be surprised by any of it because it is happening and it's happening now and it's going to keep happening. Because the people are really rebelling, but it's kind of a silent rebellion through the ballot box, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. And it makes sense to me. And I actually have a lot of sympathy for it. And I'm not saying these are easy answers or I know how to fix any of this, but it begins with understanding what the real forces in play are. It means having the right conversations. And this is the frustrating part, is watching the mainstream media do everything they can to talk about anything else except what you and I have just been talking about, which are the root causes, which is, hey, cultures that have to live with a deep degree of unfairness tend to behave in different ways than cultures that where there's greater degrees of fairness. And so we have a deeply unfair culture right now. $84,000 for a life-saving drug. I don't care how you wrap that up in your little mantle of, we need to save future lives with better future healthcare, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's unfair. It's unfair that people who are speculators and have access to 1% cost of capital, like Blackstone, gets to compete for an apartment block in San Francisco where rents are going up 13% a year. Their mortgage cost is 1%. Yours is 4%. Try competing with them. You can't make the numbers work. They'll win. And they are winning. So this is what's happened, is that we've enshrined and enabled a very small rentier class, a speculator class, the courtesans of the Federal Reserve. They've been anointed and blessed with fabulous, fantastic wealth. And everybody else is being told, hey, you can't compete. That's your trouble. And it's not. It's a tilted playing field. And that's the long and the short of it. And people know it. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know how else to explain it. You know,
yep.
Start there.
Well, don't be surprised when Marine Le Pen is elected, you know, to head up France, and the EU gets another existential shock to the system. I personally don't believe she's going to really, she might take them out of the EU, but I don't know that they'll go back to the French franc. That's something that that will really, really crucify the euro and all of Europe. But it certainly is possible. Hey, that's what she's claiming she's going to do. But politicians do make a lot of promises that they don't keep, right?
Oh, absolutely. And for anybody listening, you know, if you're reading about Marine Le Pen in the U.S. newspapers, you are being badly misinformed. There was a journal, Foreign Policy Journal, came out with a very long form interview with her. I think if you read it, you would say, wow, this is reasonable material here. It makes sense. So when she's given an opportunity to really express long form views, you'll find a lot of her points of view make sense, I think, which is, you know, hey, our people are getting hurt by policies that actually enrich a very, very few transnational corporations, which have no fealty to French customs. Our people are paying the cost of that. And we think that's unfair.
Yep.
Right. So I'm not saying I agree with everything she says, but economically, she's got it. The globalization has helped some, hurt most. And that's what she's riding on.
Hey, and look, disaffected populations do things that are sometimes in their interest and other times not in their interest. But oftentimes, they just do things to send a message to the ruling elite, and whether it's for their benefit or not. And I remember back when, what's his name, was running, the guy, the squeaky-headed guy who is running against Bush and Clinton.
Ross Perot?
Ross Perot. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got 20% of the vote, just about, which was unheard of for a third party candidate who wasn't at least politically inclined, like a George Wallace or one of those where it was a blowback response to segregation and, Democratic, Civil Rights Act policies. Now, this guy had nothing to do with the political policy, Perot, and, he got 20% of the vote and no one could believe it. except me. These things happen, and now they're happening with more regularity as the theft goes on unabated from the poor to the rich. Whether that's the intent of the policy or that's just the result of the policy, it really doesn't matter, does it, Chris?
No, it really doesn't.
And we will be charitable and say, no, it's not the intent. They didn't put these people in jail because they're too big to jail, too big to fail, whatever. Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt. Doesn't really matter, does it?
No, it's all very self-serving. Again, the deep unfairness that comes out of the Justice Department has been extraordinary. And, you know, each new attorney general, I've thought, it can't be any worse. Ed Meese, you can't get any worse. Ashcroft can't possibly get any worse. Oh, Eric Holder. Okay. You know, it just went down the drain further and further.
Lynch, you know, was the linchpin, wasn't she?
Oh, my goodness. It was astonishing. So, that's sort of the general direction of things.
Sessions is encouraging. I mean, since he got sworn in, hundreds and hundreds of these child sex trafficking rings, people have been arrested in the past week. So there's a little bit of encouragement there. I won't get into everything, the ramifications of it. We'll just leave it at that, that there's been a crackdown in the U.S. and globally that that could have positive ramifications. We'll leave it at that. That you never saw for any of these other guys, and they knew what was going on. So let's just be hopeful. Maybe something good will come of it. Anyway, Chris, best place to find you, best place to read your work.
Great. I want to direct people to peakprosperity.com and as well to an upcoming event, which is we have our once annual seminar. It's in Roe, Massachusetts. Wow. It's April 6th to 9th. That's a Thursday evening to a Sunday afternoon. It's our best event of the year. And if you everything you and I have been talking about, Carrie, is problem definition. The Roe Conference is all about solution space. What do you do as an individual for your family, for your community to become resilient, to become ready? It's just a great event. So you can find out about that too at peakprosperity.com.
And we're all about solutions here. We'll have a link to Chris's site, to Peak Prosperity, in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Forgive me, my voice is a little weak, just getting over a cold. And any questions, comments on this interview or others, send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com, kl@carrielutz.com. The Twitter feed, @CarrieLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. My new book has just come out, Viral Podcasting. If you have any interest on online radio or podcasting, it's must reading. There's a link to it on the site, and you'll find it on Amazon. Just search Viral Podcasting. Chris, it's always great having you on the show. We will talk to you again real soon, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Carrie. You too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.